Those who can do, those who cannot do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com.
From the blogulator.com.
This is Blogulator Radio.
Skewering and fawning over all things television for the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network. I'm Qualler.
And I'm Chris.
And our opinions are valid.
Dudes only edition.
Yeah. Suck it, chicks.
No, that sounds bad.
I mean,
it's not like they're gonna
do whatever.
Yeah. Our wives, Jerxica and Bridget, respectively, are not here. We're discussing a dude's show, even though Bridget watches it.
Yeah.
And Jerxica used to watch it.
I wouldn't call it a dude's show. I would call it a show for all genders.
I think it's
both men and women.
The initial reaction or initial like surface level analysis is that it's a dude's show because it's a thriller, because it's a suspense show. But clearly, Homeland, which premiered this week, is not just that. Even has a lot of different things to say, not just on gender, but race, religion,
everything,
so much more. It's clearly been critically lauded. Over and over again, it won Best Drama Series at the Emmys
last week. Yes, it did.
And Best Actress in a Drama, Best Actor in a Drama.
I think Writing.
Best Writing.
I think Directing. Did it win Directing, too?
No, I think that went to Boardwalk.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Nearly all the major drama awards went to Showtime's Little Thing.
Yeah.
So what'd you think? We didn't say a single... I think we said maybe three words total throughout watching the premiere together.
I think I snarked a couple times, but not really.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So, well, I mean, to me, it's like... I came into this new season, and I'm still coming into it, still trying to determine if a second season is a viable option. And I think... If anything, the premiere told me, at least on some level, yes. I think at first I was a little skeptical, but I think the premiere set up some plots that are kind of unresolved plots from last season that I am interested in finding out how they unfold.
Yeah, definitely. I think the major thread for me, anyways, that I was waiting for them to at least hint at in this premiere was the what I thought was pretty major unresolved plot thread of the end of season one, which was who is the mole?
Oh yeah,
in the CIA.
Yeah,
clearly there had to have been in order for Tom Walker to continually have been one step ahead of
right
them.
Yes,
but that wasn't hinted at all, and I don't know. I mean, maybe that's like their version of the. The boat or whatever on Lost.
Yeah.
The outrigger.
Right.
But, and you know, in the long run, it might not have been that much, but I thought about it once during the episode and I thought about it again when the credits rolled. But I mean, aside from those two times that kind of took me out of the world of the show, I mean, the show is ridiculously good at just on a very visceral level of keeping you entertained, keeping you on the edge of your seat. I was literally biting my nails during it. So I think at least
I didn't know
level,
you actually could bite your nails literally. Like I've never actually done it.
Before. It's literally nail biting. Like literally, like I have anxiety that causes me to bite my nails is a bad habit in general. But
okay.
If I watch a TV show, that's very thrilling.
It was a nail biter.
It literally was a nail biter.
Nice.
Or no, you wouldn't say the show bit my nails.
Right.
Because
right.
That would have to have been me.
Yes, the show was. Literally made you bite your nails,
yeah.
But it was not. Yeah,
right.
I hear you. Okay.
But so I think on that level it worked. But I mean, you mentioned like it being a viable option. Like, what was your biggest concern? Was it that the whole thing about Brody not dying at the end of season?
Well, no, I didn't have a problem with that necessarily. But I think I touched on this when I talked about the first season with Bridget is I don't know, the first season told such a complete story by itself that and in a lot of ways Carrie was so played by Claire Danes, of course, is so fully removed from her job and what she was investigating at the end of the season, that the only way you could kind of pull her back in is in what is kind of a forced way to get her back into the action. And I don't think there's any way around that. And in fact, in the premiere tonight, in some ways, I mean, that's kind of what happened. It was kind of like Mandy Patinkin, Saul, comes in and says, uh-oh, we need Carrie for something. I got to give her a call.
Yeah, there's an informant that will only speak to Carrie Madison.
Right, right.
Which is, it's a contrivance, but it might be a necessary contrivance to not just bring Claire Danes' character back into the fold, but I don't know, I think one of the things we noticed from both the episode and the this season on teaser that happened during the credits at the end was that it seems like her character, at least for a good chunk of episodes, is going to be stuck in Lebanon.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting.
Which I think makes that contrivance a little more forgivable than on other shows when it just brings them exactly back to square one.
Right, right.
Where it's not square one. I mean, she's kind of stuck off. She still is on her own, but has that link to the CIA.
Right.
The bigger, like, separation that they only hinted at the very last scene of the teaser was the whole fact that basically they're telling two completely different stories now with two completely different leads. And they did that for the first chunk of episodes of season one, where it's Carrie's story and then Brody's story, and then they eventually meet together midway through.
Yeah.
And it seems like maybe they're going to do something similar this season.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's going to feel fresh doing it a second time, or if they're going to do it in a more interesting way to get them back at supposedly this hotel room where maybe their romance gets rekindled either on a true basis, or maybe it's more of a manipulation by Brody's character. Who knows?
Or maybe just a manipulation in the promo.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Yeah.
It could be a dream sequence. We don't.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. but I think that overall, I mean, I was definitely pleased with the premiere. I think it's hard to. I think we had the same problem when we podcasted after the Breaking Bad season premiere.
Yeah.
It's like.
Like, what do you say?
Exactly.
Like,
what do you,
I think other than what, you know, my initial reaction is just. Okay, Homeland is back, and I'm happy about it. But I mean,
this is a show we like. It has returned.
Right, right. Yeah, I guess one other angle that I am interested in them continuing to investigate in a way is Brody's Muslim religion and his faith, and that was kind of an interesting angle, at least in the scene that where his daughter, I forget what her name is.
Dana
is at, was it, it was a Quaker church? Is that what I was
No, getting? It's her new school, new private school.
Okay.
And I don't know if that necessarily means I can't be Quaker, because I can't imagine the vice president's son, or the vice president would be Quaker.
Well, yeah.
But I think it's just like the style of meeting they have in the morning.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that whole interaction was seemed to hint at some interesting things that they're going at. And, of course, the closing scene where she was kind of helping him bury his Muslim identity, symbolically, of course.
Right, the Quran.
Right. I don't know. That's something that from the first season that I really enjoyed, and I think... there's a lot of rich material that can be mined from that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that because it's such a, it's not a subtle show, like,
right.
It's not the same, like, you'd get from a season premiere of Mad Men, for instance. It kind of comes balls to the wall out of the gate. And, that reveal wasn't something I was necessarily expecting, but it was definitely like a good, like, it was meaty, but it wasn't necessarily something that could blow everything because I enjoyed how they handled it in season one, where they teased you by kind of messing with your expectations. Like, they were maybe wondering if they could get some viewers to automatically make the leap that because Brody's Muslim, that would mean that he'd be the terrorist.
Right.
And at first, and you get a couple, like, teases back and forth about whether he is or not until that is found. And with here, it's a completely different context because the mystery is no longer, is Brody a terrorist? The question is, you know, what does his faith have to do with the decisions that he's making, because he seems to still, he seems basically on the fence between his allegiances to Nazir and his allegiances to his family. Not necessarily to the U.S., but I think to his family.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So I think one thing that was clear, I definitely like the scene with his daughter, and I think that he has a strong allegiance to his daughter. She was basically the reason why he didn't kill himself.
Right.
And the rest of the cabinet in the end of season one. But I actually really like the scene, both after the school scene and before the burying scene with his wife, Marina Backman, the actress?
Yeah.
And her reaction to finding out that he is Muslim kind of made a new area because of there was some subtleties in season one about how much he actually seemed to care about his wife.
Yes.
Starting with when he arrived home and there was a very awkward sex scene that occurred between them that made you wonder how much of it was him and his power or control versus, you know, him actually coming back to the woman that he loves. And I think that's still up in the air right now. I think that there's, you know, casual scenes where he acts like the doting husband, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he is. I think that it's strange that we get such a dramatic kind of confrontation between them, because it's very clear in that scene between him, his wife, and his daughter that he's taking his daughter's side, to quote the reporter that says, you have to take sides.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. I think you can tell... Well, first of all, Brody is just a difficult character to read by nature, by the way that he's mm-hmm. written, by the way his character is portrayed, and yeah, and especially the first season, what his motivations were is kind of revealed to us as the season went on, and in somewhat of a plot device for the viewer. So now that we know at least that he's on Abu Nazir's side or working with Abu Nazir, I think some of that motivation...
Maybe reluctantly.
Yeah, yeah. Right. You know, his motivations, I think you're right in that we don't really know if he's doing what he's doing for his family or if it's for Abu Nazir or if it's... I think what the writers are going for is it's some combination of both. I think right. He has a loyalty to Abu Nazir for what he taught him in his 8 years there, and certainly what he experienced over there in season, well, what we learned about in season one. I think that his relationship then with his wife is, you know, at the end of the first season, it seemed like he was trying to kind of mend things with her, and things were improving, but obviously there's still some kind of tension there in terms of what does he need and want from her, and what is she looking for from him. And I think, you know, it seems as though she's starting to be kind of happy being a congressman's
yeah.
wife. But on the other hand, I think there's still something there that she needs something more from him. And I think you know, bringing up her finding out that he's Muslim, which, I, you know, the more that I think about that, it's kind of a ballsy move to have that revealed in the first episode of the mm-hmm. second season.
It is.
You know, that kind of brings up old wounds from what happened in the last season right away. You know, yeah. she near the end was kind of thinking of what happened in the last season and kind of obviously reminding us as well of what happened in the last season. And, you know, that'll be interesting stuff to explore.
And I don't think it's coincidental that they kept hinting, or not really hinting, they're pretty hammering it, the fact that she's gotten cozy with the vice president's wife.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if there is a, you know, a domino effect to this reveal, it might be next to come to the vice president's wife.
Right. And even the vice president has already hinted at there's more to vet out with Brody.
Yeah, and we got that in the teaser too, yeah. Where there's another dramatic confrontation between Vice President and Brody.
Right.
One thing
you'd think at this point they would have figured out more stuff about Brody than you'd think the FBI would have been able to vet out the fact that he's working with Abu Nazir at some point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of the I mean, you kind of got to look at the show. I mean, we talk about it. It's a very intelligent show. It's a very prestige drama for, you know, the pay cable networks, and it won Best Drama Series. So you kind of treat it as a high grade piece of art. But at the same time, I mean, these are the guys that created 24.
Right. And yeah, so exactly.
It is a smart show, but at the same time, it is a thriller, and it has got to kind of have a certain degree of suspension of disbelief. Not Jack Bauer level, but,
right.
You know, somewhere where it's not, I mean, clearly there's not an actual Nicholas Brody in the U.S. Congress.
we hope not.
We hope, least. Right.
yeah, I guess in part, building off of that point, but the action sequences in this episode, I thought were well executed. One thing over the weekend, I caught up with Dr. Peace, and he's watched the first 8 episodes of the first season of Homeland, and he said he enjoyed it, except that he didn't like the how CBS-y the Brody and his wife and his family scenes felt to him. Which I don't know if I can see where he's getting at. I think what to me is what I think he's getting at, CBS-y as an adjective, is kind of the production value / when Mandy Patinkin is talking to people and questioning people, and when Jamie Sheridan is talking to people and questioning people. I think there are elements of the show that do feel in a lot of ways very, very much procedural. And I think, like you were saying, you know, Howard Gordon and Alex Ganza were the showrunners of 24. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the kind of procedural things that happen in the show, how we get from point A to point B, still kind of operate on that level. It's still kind of operating on a 24 style paradigm in a way which is fine, and it's successful. But I think it, you know, like you're saying, when we're talking about it in terms of a prestige TV show or a, you know, an Emmy award winning TV show, yeah. I think automatically the bar gets set a lot higher. I don't know if that's necessarily fair of me to say that it should be that way, because it's obviously it's very successful in what it's doing. But that's just, you know, the bar has been raised.
I know. Homeland. I mean, it does make you feel kind of elitist to, like,
right.
say, like, oh, there's still some network qualities.
Right,
but
exactly.
Like, it does feel like exactly what it is, which is network showrunners that were capable in their duties on a network at being elevated to a place where they have more freedoms. They are allowed to push more envelopes, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not necessarily, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's just,
yeah. Exactly.
On a pure visceral level, like, I probably get as much joy watching an episode of Homeland as I do Mad Men or Breaking Bad, but at the same time, like, I don't know if I necessarily, I don't know if I necessarily would have ever given Best Drama Series award to Homeland over Breaking Bad or Mad Men.
See, when I'm comparing the first season of Homeland to the fourth season of Breaking Bad, man, I just really thought the first season was as flawless of a season as you can possibly get, and I would probably rank it over Breaking Bad season 4.
Really?
Yeah.
Gus's demise?
Yeah, I would. I would. Yeah. Just because, I've been thinking about this a lot the past couple of weeks, especially since our last Breaking Bad podcast, and how the final season has kind of gone, how Breaking Bad has been going in the fourth and the fifth seasons. And I think when I look back at Breaking Bad as a whole, I think what stands out to me is the third season and the unpredictable nature of the third season. And obviously, as we all know, the writers of the show in the third season had to write the show on the fly. And I think that's when the show really broke through for me, is when there was basically anything is on the table to happen. Mm-hmm. I think since then, reflecting on season 4 of Breaking Bad and season 5, the first part of season 5, when I look back at it, everything that should have happened on Breaking Bad so far has happened. There hasn't been anything since then that's blown me away in the same way that the season finale of Homeland season 1 did. Nothing that just like blew me away the same way that Carrie getting her mind wiped out at the end of season 1 did.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. So, I mean, it's interesting trying to compare not only on the level of how cohesive or how overall, you know, you feel kind of blown away by the events or the plot twists or whatever, or the character developments. But especially for like a season 1, I'm just thinking this now, like, I'm wondering in the future in 3 seasons, if Homeland makes it that far, if I'll be as committed and as interested in the inner workings of these characters' lives as I am in Walter White's and Jesse Pinkman's.
Well, right, and that's why I still feel like I don't know what's going to happen, uh-huh, if it's going to be as good after the first season, just because of that. Right. When I'm strictly comparing seasons, which is what Emmy voters should be doing, I don't know if they are or not, but if you're strictly comparing this particular season of television versus this particular season of television, I that's just where I would go.
Okay.
So
fair enough. Agree to disagree. But I think that, I mean, what we seem to both be coming back to is that when we, with a show like Homeland that has the trappings of, you know, a thriller that may appear on a network television show, or, you know, a crime show that even on CBS, as our co-blogger Dr. Peace alluded to, is that despite those, there's so much other rich stuff that is happening that it's really easy for, like, you and I never thought about CBS watching the first season, and like, you kind of blow past a lot of those contrivances and trappings of a plot such as this, where it's, you know, about the logistics of terrorism seeping into the underbelly of U.S. politics, or any number of things, even going down to like the psychology of a bipolar main character. But it seems like those things seem so minor in comparison to the big questions that they raise that you would never ever see on another show about any of these other topics.
Right, exactly. I think that's what, to me, makes Homeland such a special show, is it, so many things come to mind when you're watching it. You know, first and foremost, obviously, is what is a terrorist? That's obviously a question that the writers just keep circling around and keep touching on, and for good reason, is the definition of terrorism. What does that mean? What does it mean for world politics? I forget. I think it was the AV Club that wrote about Homeland and kind of the power of a show that talks about what's happening now, rather than taking, say, a Mad Men type show that uses the past to comment on the present. Mm-hmm. There aren't many shows that just take what's happening now and just talk about what's happening now, and that might mean that 10 years down the road, a show that's specifically about things that are happening in the year 2012 might not feel as relevant as a show that's more broad in nature, that kind of uses a time element as a way to talk about other things, not just what's happening on the show, but other things in society and the way that people interact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one thing that makes Homeland stand out is it can touch on things that are happening right now. And, you know, obviously it also touches on, a lot of gender politics types of things. It touches upon, you know, I think one of my favorite things about the first season is how much of the relationship between Brody and Carrie was based on their sexual relationship and how that shifted everything. You know, you can analyze it from so many different angles, so many different lenses, that it's just, it makes it really interesting. I don't know that it's the show's job to answer any of those questions, but I think it brings those things to light in a way that most shows aren't able to do.
Yeah, and I think it does it with like a level of danger that kind of adds to the discomfort and the suspense in a way that, like we were talking about, like other shows wouldn't dare try because it's so willing to go to those places. Like, I mean, and my first thought was when I got a glimpse of, and I actually accidentally, I was watching the wrong episode of Homeland, like, okay. I was too ahead, and I was like, wait, what the hell is going on? And then all of a sudden I see Carrie and Brody get in bed together, and I was like, oh my god, they're not really going there. And you know, when you see something, like, out of context.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And it reminds me of, I don't remember if it was you or Bridget, but, like, when you watched Mad Men without watching the full episode, the scene where Don and Joan are in the bar together, and
oh,
you're
yeah.
like, oh god, they're not really gonna go there, right?
Yeah, right.
But
right,
then you
right.
go back and you watch the whole context, and it's like, I can't believe they actually went to that well successfully,
right,
without like making you think like they're doing it for ratings or they're doing it to be wild and you know, scandalous,
right?
But they
right.
do it because it brings to mind those questions, and it opens up a whole new series of options for both analyzing the characters individually, but also the socio-political relationships between, you know, what they represent on a deeper level. And it creates like an atmosphere that is not just suspenseful, but just downright like insidious. And it kind of, it works on, like I've been keep saying, a visceral level, but it definitely makes you want to keep watching just from a character standpoint. I mean, we've been talking forever about the anti-hero in this supposed golden age of television, you know, with Walter Light and Don Draper and blah, 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 blah.
Mm.
But then you get Carrie Matheson, who is, once again, at some level an anti-hero. Like, you keep wanting to be like, why are you doing this? Why would you possibly sleep with the guy that you think might be a terrorist?
Well, I wouldn't call her an anti-hero by any means.
No, but they play with that idea.
Well,
I think so, anyway. I mean, I am constantly wondering when I'm watching it, like, I'm never 100% sympathetic to Carrie. I think that I think in the season premiere, she made the wrong decision to go on this trip. I think that for her mental health.
I don't think that makes her an anti-hero, though.
Well, what's your definition of anti-hero, then?
Somebody who, well, you're comparing her to Tony, I mean, the discussions we were having before was about anti-hero as in Tony Soprano and in Walter White, people that like murder other people.
I don't think murder is necessarily a prerequisite for anti-hero.
Explain more about
my idea is that they're playing, so I wouldn't say that she's a classic anti-hero by any means, but I think that you're constantly, just like you were with Nicholas Brody, there's a reason why these two are co-leads. They're two main characters because you never are completely sympathetic to one or the other.
My perspective. No, that's yeah. true. Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah. And I'm constantly not only like saying like, Carrie, you shouldn't be doing this because of your mental health, but I'm also saying like, you shouldn't be doing this because it's not going to get you the answers you want to. She's a self-destructive character.
Yeah, that's true.
And
that's
so by that mean, I mean, it plays into the gender politics thing for one degree, because it shows how she's treated as a woman in this role, as a and also as a person with mental health in this role of a government official, of, you know, somebody in a position of authority, blah, blah, blah. But it also kind of makes you watch her in comparison to Nick to Brody, who is constantly also doing, so far as including murder, and that's making you dislike him more and more. But at the same time, you keep wondering, you know, well, why am I still interested in following him? Why do I care that his family stays together when this guy is acting in the name of terrorism, or in the name of, you know, a cause that clearly he's been brainwashed to believe rather than one he actually does believe? Versus Carrie, I mean, you could make the same argument for her.
I think I get what you're saying. I think it's just, it's a show that, I think you're right in the sense that it's neither of the lead characters are traditional heroes in the sense of what is a hero in 21st century fiction. I think, you know, they're both characters that are, it's hard for me to compare it to, you know, other shows that are kind of in that mold of one central character who's, I just keep coming back to, you know, Tony Soprano, Walter White, even on some level, Don Draper does bad things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's. I don't know that I would put it in that same category. I don't know that I would even categorize it. I think it's just the way that the characters are written. You know, I would say that Brody is a pretty sympathetic character and makes me understand. When you said that he's been brainwashed into what he's believes, I think that's one of the things about the show that I really like, is I don't feel like the writers are telling us he's been brainwashed. I think that is a preconceived notion that we have, that if you work with a traditionally known terrorist organization, you're brainwashed. Whether or not that's actually true or not, I think the show does a good job of raising the question of at least saying, oh, wait, hold on a second. Maybe, you know, I understand his motivations, even if his motivations result in innocent people being killed in the United States versus innocent people being killed in Iraq. And
well, that's one thing I thought was interesting about the premiere, is that for the first time he actually articulated that he was not going to take innocent lives.
Right.
Whereas in the I mean, when he...
Well, and I don't think he's ever intended to take innocent lives, but I think...
Well, he did when he first tried to blow himself up.
Well, in his mind, though, he wasn't taking out innocent lives. He was trying to assassinate the government officials, though, isn't that...
Yeah, but there weren't just government officials there. There were bodyguards, there were other servicemen that were patrolling the door. You could make that argument anyway.
Right, yeah. Right. But, I mean, I'm saying in his, you know, his...
In his mind, anybody that worked for the government was not innocent.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's what makes... Just, you know, the show brings up a lot of interesting questions like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's... When you talk about... I mean, I feel like I was talking about Carrie from the perspective of when you do or do not sympathize with her, and then you're talking about Brody from that same perspective. I mean, that's the exact parallel that the show is going for, right?
Right, exactly.
And so when you watch it, it's not necessarily from a focal point, like you mentioned Don Draper, Tony Soprano, blah, 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 and that's a specific, it's not only a focal point as far as, you know, a one centerpiece of a show, but it's specifically a male centerpiece of the show. And that's bringing up the gender politics, is it doesn't just show it from a dual perspective, like even Breaking Bad, where you have Jesse Pinkman and Walter White. They're still both, you know, the the traditional white male protagonist, and here you get the correlation of that, and not only that, but they dare to put them, these two characters, in a doomed romance, as the creators keep saying in a lot of their press releases and interviews, which I think makes it, I mean, coming back to your question about whether or not this season is viable, I think that will be very interesting to see if that was a manipulation of the teaser, or how organically they will be able to bring these two back together, or if it will just be for the pure basis of driving the plot, and because it is kind of difficult to have a second season of the show where the two main characters basically totally diverged, and even one of them asked the other one to never talk to them again.
Right.
And you've got to bring them back together at some point, otherwise it's basically watching two different shows simultaneously.
Yeah, and I've read as well that that this second season is the first one that is not based on the original show.
Right.
So I think now is the time for Gordon and Ganza, G&G, to show what they've got up their sleeves. And I talked about this in my blog posts last week after Homeland won the Emmys, is Showtime obviously has a track record of taking its successful properties and kind of running them into the ground until there's some kind of end game in sight. And, you know, I'm actually, for the first time in like a long time, I'm actually excited to watch the premiere of Dexter now that there actually is an end game in sight for that show. But I do have concerns that if Homeland is the kind of show that, now that it's won an Emmy and has garnered Showtime, the network, a lot, even more praise than they've ever historically received, I think, at least from any other show that they've had.
Yeah, well, it was their first Emmy series win.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's their first Emmy series win, and it's obviously, you know, Obama dropped the Homeland name recently. So it's, you know, it's obviously brought the network a lot more attention. I just hope that they can kind of pull from maybe the AMC model of doing it, where they really do negotiate with the showrunners from the get-go in a creative way, in a creative sense, so that it's going out when it's done. I mean, this is way down the line. I don't know if I should even be worrying about this right now, but
it's hard not to when you get so committed to a show early on.
Right, exactly. And especially a show like this where the first season was such a slam bang season, but also felt like a very much a season where a lot of the major questions of the show were resolved.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see.
Well, it's clear that, like, I mean, that was kind of the thing they kept saying was, you know, things felt wrapped up at the end of season one, but the thing that surprised me is that clearly not everything was. They did start the whole thing with Carrie and Beirut, but we have the Muslim thing coming out that is still a holdover from season one in some respects.
Right.
And the question of what am I thinking of? what's his name? Estes?
Yeah.
The head of the CIA?
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that is a question of clearly, there. I like their tense scene of him and Carrie. I mean, I don't think Carrie is going to be stuck in Lebanon for the whole season, and definitely not for the whole series. So eventually, there's got to be some kind of resolution where she's invited back to the CIA. And I'll be interested to see how they make that second half of the contrivance seem plausible, because they basically made every other contrivance seem plausible to me so far.
Yeah. They've definitely prove themselves in that sense.
Yeah. So. You mentioned Showtime running things into the ground, and I wonder, I mean, we've also got the guys from 24, a classic example of a show that was run into the ground.
Right.
So maybe they both, and I mean, not only Dexter seems to have reinvented itself, but Weeds is over.
Right.
And Nurse Jackie is supposedly reinvented.
Yeah.
Even though I've never watched that show. So maybe everybody's taken a step back and thought.
Showtime has realized that consequences equal interest. Interesting things.
So maybe they've done some important reflection.
I hope so.
Let's see.
I think so.
Thanks for talking Homeland with me, caller.
Yeah, thanks for coming over and talking it with me, too.
Yeah, good premiere. If you want to check out any of the shows that we mentioned that aren't Homeland, a lot of them are available on Netflix. Our sponsor, you can go to bit.ly/blogflix. That's BLOGFLIX. Or you can just click the link on the page of where you're streaming this episode of Blogulator Radio. You can also find us online at theblogulator.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter. And that's, I think, it for this week.
I believe so. And you can also, if you subscribe to the disc version of Netflix, which some people still do, you can watch Homeland on the discs way that my parents are doing.
Yeah.
So
the discs, the digital video discs.
Although they keep telling me it's a very long wait, which I forgot that that's a thing that happens.
Right, waiting.
But, you know, that I'm sure that doesn't happen very often.
No. Netflix. No, yeah. So. thanks for listening. Check us back next week where we got tons of new shows to talk about this fall besides just Homeland.
Yeah.
Tons of premieres. You can check our thoughts about it on Twitter. We're tweeting about it every once in a while.
Yep. All kinds of stuff.
But don't forget that because we write about television and talk about it, that our
opinions are valid.